The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Obstruction Junction, our democracy doesn't function. Flouting subpoenas, cause executive privilege. The House Judiciary Committee was supposed to hear testimony today from former White House counsel and Smile School dropout Don McGahn. They wanted to ask McGahn about the section of the Mueller report where McGahn says Trump tried to obstruct justice. And it's a large section.
Yeah.
But last night, the White House blocked McGahn from testifying to Congress. So they don't get to ask about obstruction because the alleged obstructor obstructed the witness to his obstructing. It's like calling a witness in a murder trial and the murderer standing up and saying, "Your Honor, this man can't testify. I just murdered him. Therefore, I'm innocent." Now, in yesterday's chopper talk, Trump explained that keeping McGahn from
chopper
testifying,
talk,
it's not about Trump.
Why are you asking Don McGahn to defy a congressional subpoena?
Well, as I understand it, they're doing that for the office of the presidency for future presidents.
That is optimistic. He thinks there will be future presidents. One person who was not happy about this was House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Jeff Nadler, who said this.
Our subpoenas are not optional. Mr. McGahn has a legal obligation to be here for this scheduled appearance. If he does not immediately correct his mistake, this committee will have no choice but to enforce the subpoena against him.
Stern words. If he didn't direct them to an empty chair. Okay, I'm done with McGahn's chair, and I've got some serious questions for Donald Trump's lazy boy, by which I mean his son.
Ah, okay. Which one?
But
there are three, you know?
But there is a little good news on the obstruction front. Congress subpoenaed Trump's accounting firm for Trump's financial records, and Trump sued his own accountants to keep them from turning anything over to Congress. But yesterday, a federal judge upheld the subpoena. Yeah, that's huge.
That's good.
We are finally getting his financial records, and I have a strong feeling.
Soon, I hope.
That we're going to find out that the whole time, Eric was just a shell corporation. Nothing in there. The judge rejected the White House claim that Congress does not have legitimate oversight, pointing to precedents involving James Buchanan, Warren G. Harding, Richard Nixon, and Bill Clinton, or as history will remember them, Bizarro Mount Rushmore.
Thanks.
The judge wrote in his decision, "This court is not prepared to roll back the tide of history, not even to 2015. Just roll it back a little, and I'll never ask for anything again."
Okay.
Naturally, Trump smelled a rat.
We disagree with that ruling. It's crazy. It's totally the wrong decision by, obviously, an Obama-appointed judge.
Oh, my God.
You can't trust an Obama-appointed judge. Take it from me, a Putin-appointed president.
Okay. We're almost there.
I know what. Trump promised to appeal this decision, and now comes the fun part.
Yeah.
Because the case is going to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is headed by, drumroll please,
Judge Merrick Garland.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
I didn't know what was going to be in there.
That's it.
This.
Oh, and that's where it ends. Perfect spot to cut off. He kept going. Stephen Colbert was on fire last night. Welcome to the show. It is a Wednesday. I'm Nicole Sandler, and the world is, well, not the world. Our country has gone mad because we've installed a certified lunatic in the White House. We all know how it happened. And really, I'm not going to blame the Jill Stein voters or the Gary Johnson voters. No, who I'm going to blame are the people who stayed home. If you didn't vote, this is on you. If all the people who didn't vote in 2016 showed up to vote against Donald Trump, we'll have nothing to worry about. So Stephen Colbert on fire, as usual, last night. I got to tell you, this comedy stuff isn't it as easy as it looks. You know how I marvel at the genius of Randy Rainbow. I'm titillated by the song stylings of our friend Lauren Mayer. I'm bombastic over the top of the talents of Boca Brittany Summers. And so I thought, as I told you yesterday, I had this idea. I've got an earworm of Neil Young's Let's Impeach the President for Lying stuck in my ear. And I thought, well, that's an easy one. We can write a song to it. And I got creative yesterday, and I knocked out a few verses using the song as a guide. And I emailed them to Brit. And, there's a reason she is a, you know, comedy writer, producer, performer, and I'm not. I'm really opening myself up here. Here's what she said about the work I did. She said, "You really put some work into those lyrics." Actually, I didn't. It only took about 10 minutes. But that aside, she said, "The thing is, it's way too long. A good parody should be hit and run. All points get lost to the listener after 2 minutes. Even 2 minutes is a stretch to hold an audience's attention." By the way, not according to Randy Rainbow, but I digress. She says, continues, "Albeit I have done long ones at Neil Rogers' request to kill time on the show so he could eat his food." And she said, "If you still want to collaborate on this, here's some lyrics I took a stab at." So I'm going to, against my better judgment, because I really don't sing, I'll share with you some of the lyrics that I put together, such as they are. And then I will share with you the one verse that Britt Summers wrote, because, you know, she's the professional. All right, I'll do sort of a Leonard Cohen speaking, singing kind of thing, if you don't mind, because, again, I'm not really the singer, just saying. All right, hit it. You can sing along, too. Let's impeach the president for lying. He lies much more than any president before. With over 10,000 lies he has told so far this year, or this term, he'll just keep on lying more and more and more and more. Trump's the man who ordered family separated. Refugees seeking asylum from lives of misery. Tearing screaming babies from the arms of their mothers. And increasing the numbers of Trump's own deportees. Is this okay? Let's impeach the president for obstruction. The Mueller report lays it out in great detail. Breaking every norm and law in the country. Donald Trump really belongs in jail. Just a couple more, okay? Let's impeach the president for firing Comey. He said he did it just to stop that rusher thing. Then he bragged about it to Putin's henchmen. Hey, Donald Trump, no one elected you king. Oh, and that's all I have time for. I finally faded out. I did have a few more lyrics. I'll just read them to you. The next lyric goes, let's impeach old Donald Trump for trying to bring the Mueller probe to an early close by ordering Don McGahn to fire Mueller and telling Sessions to arrest every one of his political foes. I told you I'm not a singer. Let's impeach the president for sucking up to Russia's Vladimir Putin and other strongmen dictators just like him and subjecting us to your idiotic kin. All right, one more. Yeah. Let's impeach Trump for gaslighting a nation, insisting the sky is green instead of blue. Let's get rid of Donald Trump for good now, after one big final group send-off. Fuck you! See, you were supposed to sing along with that. Now, just one more quick one, because now I'll show you. That's my very wordy crack at a song. Okay, here's what Boca Brittany wrote. and it's quick and to the point. I'll give you the little intro, okay? I'm a great commentator on paper. Huh? Okay, this is Brittany speaking, singing. Just impeach that lying orange douchebag. Indict and convict, then tear down his goddamn wall. Traitor pubs laugh like hyenas at subpoenas. Dems don't seem to mind getting repeatedly kicked in the balls. All right. There you go. that's our attempt at... Thank you very much. Thank you very much at musical comedy for today. And thanks to Boca Brittany Summers. We'll have to get Britt back on the show one of these days. To be honest with you, my studio is just a fucking mess that I don't want to, you know, have anybody over, but we'll work on it. Okay. Oh my God, what a day. I'm just over it. Let me tell you what happened this morning. Okay. Let me walk you through this. Unbelievable. Following escalating reports all last night and this morning that more and more members of the House Democratic Caucus were joining in the calls to open an impeachment inquiry into Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi this morning held a closed-door meeting with all the House Democrats. Now, according to the reports, despite those growing calls for taking immediate action by her caucus, Nancy Pelosi said she was sticking with her previous strategy of having various Democratic-led committees conduct separate investigations, including the House Judiciary Committee led by Jerry Nadler, and then deciding later whether the politically risky move of impeachment was warranted. You are too in the YouTube chat room is taking exception with my use of Neil Young's Let's Impeach the President for lying. I can't help it if you're not a Neil Young fan. Neil Young, as Diane Russell just said in the chat room, wrote the song for George W. Bush. I'll play for you the original first verse so you can get the reference anyway. Okay. Sorry, you brought it up. I'm just going with it. Yeah. This is how the song originally went. Abusing all the power that we gave him. And shipping all our money out the door. And shipping all our money out the door. And then he goes into, you know, lying us into a war. Listen to the album. It's called Living with War by Neil Young. Actually, Crosby, Stills, and Nash backing him up on the record. It's a good one. Okay. I love Neil Young. Don't be dissing Neil Young to me. I think that album was brilliant. Okay, back to what happened this morning. As much as I don't want to talk about it, we have to. So Nancy Pelosi emerged from that meeting. And yeah, the critics are out. Okay, torture? Really? Just saying. All right. So Nancy Pelosi had the meeting this morning with the entire Democratic caucus. And she emerged from the meeting and said this. Whoops. It would help if I turned off the music.
The
here we go.
Structure of America. Yeah.
That it's important to follow the facts. We believe that no one is above the law, including the President of the United States. And we believe that the President of the United States is engaged in a cover-up. And that was the nature of the meeting.
Okay, so Nancy Pelosi this morning said Donald Trump engaged in a cover-up. Well, apparently, sources from inside the White House say poor Donnie Connie woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning. He was already angry and ranting and raving and raging when he heard Nancy Pelosi's comments. Well, it was after that meeting with her House Democratic Caucus that Nancy Pelosi and Chucky Schmucky were set scheduled to go over to the White House to have their next meeting about infrastructure. So, a little bit after Nancy Pelosi made that statement before the cameras, she and Chuck went to the White House for that scheduled infrastructure meeting with Don the Con. The meeting didn't last long. I'll tell you that right now. Trump reportedly told Chuck and Nancy that as long as they insisted on investigating him and his administration, there would be no deal on infrastructure or anything else. Seriously, he went in there, he had a temper tantrum, he then ended the meeting and hastily ordered the press corps to the Rose Garden where he took the podium. And what followed was truly remarkable. I'm not going to play you his entirety of statements, just a few choice lines here and there as I could not believe my ears. All right, so here's how he walks out to the podium. Remember, this was allegedly a very hastily called press conference after Nancy Pelosi said that he was engaged in a cover-up and he was so mad he had to cancel the thing. Meanwhile, there was a printed poster, you know, posted on the lectern that he stood behind, and they had copies that they handed out to the press as they were leaving. And what this pre-produced poster that was hanging on the lectern said: Mueller investigation by the numbers, $35 million spent, 2,800 subpoenas, 675 days, 500 plus witnesses, 18 angry Democrats, no collusion, no obstruction. Obviously, it was not a spur-of-the-moment press conference. They had prepared for this. They made visual props. One was posted on the lectern, and the others were handed out to the press. So Donald Trump gets up behind the microphone with his, you know, best Alec Baldwin impression with his, you know, rounded lips and sniffles. He said this.
So I came here to do a meeting on infrastructure with Democrats.
Yeah.
Not really thinking they wanted to do infrastructure or anything else other than investigate.
Right.
And I just saw that Nancy Pelosi, just before our meeting, made a statement that we believe that the President of the United States is engaged in a cover-up.
Oh, my God.
Well, it turns out I'm the most, and I think most of you would agree to this, I'm the most transparent president probably in the history of this country.
All right. No, you're not.
We have given,
but, you know,
on a witch hunt, on a hoax. The whole thing with Russia was a hoax.
What?
As it relates to the Trump administration and myself.
What?
It was a total horrible thing.
Yeah.
That happened to our country.
You are a total horrible thing that happened to our country. There he said he's the most transparent administration that ever, you know, invaded the White House. Bullshit. He would not sit for an interview with Robert Mueller. That is far from transparent. So anyway, then he went on talking. He went through, you know, he went on a diatribe sort of lying about the things he's allegedly accomplished while in office, you know, taking credit for the good economy that he inherited from Obama. Then he went through what the Mueller investigation entailed, you know, reading off his little pre-prepared poster that was on the front of the lectern, and claiming he was an open book and cooperated fully, even though he refused to meet with Mueller to answer questions. And then he said this.
And instead of walking in happily into a meeting.
Yeah.
I walk in to look at people that had just said that I was doing a cover-up. I don't
well,
do
you
cover-ups.
Are. You don't do cover-ups.
You people know that probably
really?
Better than anybody.
Oh,
and
Stormy Daniels knows that.
I was just looking at a list
of some of the
things that we just did. More than 2,500 subpoenas qualified for.
Okay, and then he goes through again what the Mueller investigation entailed. Obviously, they didn't play along, much to, you know, the opposite of what he said. But then, after he did all that, then he slandered Mueller's team members who did the investigation.
And of the 19 people that were heading up this investigation, or whatever you want to call it, with Bob Mueller,
whatever you want
they
to
were
call
contributors
it.
To the Democrat Party, most
oh
of them,
God.
And to Hillary Clinton.
Oh, my
they
God.
They hated President Trump. They hated him.
They hated
which
him.
In so many ways.
Oh, my God.
The passion.
They hated him.
They went to her big party after the election that turned out to be a wake.
Yeah.
Like that we're setting.
So,
not a party. It was a records with wake.
I thought economy. I could pause this.
And they were very angry.
Gotcha. They were very angry. See, here's the problem. Donald Trump doesn't understand that even employees of the FBI are allowed to have personal opinions. They're allowed to be Democrats. Oh, my God. Robert Mueller is a Republican. Bill Barr, obviously, is a Republican. Rod Rosenstein was a Republican. Andy, what's his name, former acting head of the FBI, was a Republican. They're all Republicans, except the ones that hate you, Donald Trump. What about the Republicans? Should I complain that there were Republicans who may have supported you investigating you? That's not how it works. And everything I've heard from anyone who's ever worked at the FBI or CIA or any other intelligence agency says their politics do not play a part in their work. You're the only one who thinks like that, you fucking piece of shit. Sorry, I get carried away. More of what he said.
These are the people that after 2 years and $40 million or $35 million, it'll end up being a lot more than that by the time all the bills are paid. This is what happened. No collusion, no obstruction, no nothing.
And so he says now he will not work with them. So, really... All along, I've been saying that I didn't understand why Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer went to the Oval Office to meet with him about infrastructure in the first place after he had already made a blanket statement saying, I will not cooperate with any of your subpoenas, nor will any of my peons. Those are the people that work for Donald Trump. They're his peons. Nor will they. In fact, we know that even Don McGahn, who no longer works for the president, didn't come to the hearing yesterday because Donald Trump told him not to. Don McGahn, go figure, another lifelong Republican. Shouldn't we have a problem with that? No, because we know everybody is entitled to have their own political opinions. Doesn't mean that it's going to carry over into their work, but maybe it does. Don McGahn's chief goal was to get Brett Kavanaugh and Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, which he did. He worked with the Federalist Society to get those horrific Supreme Court nominees through Donald Trump's administration. So, you know, let's not, even though Don McGahn was responsible for a lot of the really, the testimony that's very not too good for Donald Trump, let's put it that way, doesn't mean he's a good guy. And I think his reasons for not testifying are because he doesn't want to go against his party. Should we be complaining about that? Should we say they're all Republicans so it's not valid? No. Robert Mueller is apparently negotiating with the House Judiciary Committee about the parameters for his for him to testify. Robert Mueller or his team, I'm not quite sure who said it, but their objection is that they don't want to create a political spectacle. It's too late because the political spectacle was created by Donald Trump. And it's exacerbated every single fucking day when this guy just destroys, decimates norms and rules and laws and the way things have been done in this country for over 250 years. Donald Trump is systematically not only destroying the planet, by not giving a shit about climate change, not only destroying the democracy by making a mockery of it, but destroying the very fabric of this nation. We are fucked. And unfortunately, the Democratic Party has feckless people at the head of it. So here's Nancy Pelosi after the meeting with Donald Trump. She goes up to the microphones after Trump has said, we're not going to work with you on infrastructure. I'm not doing anything with you until you stop investigating me. Which, as I said a couple of weeks ago, Pelosi and Schumer should have said to him, guess what? No deal. We are not doing anything with you. We are not going to give you one piece of legislation to sign or veto until you comply with congressional subpoenas, period, end of statement. But they didn't do it. And instead, they let Donald Trump say to them, I'm not working with you until you end this witch hunt of an investigation.
He came into the room, made a statement that he made was, I won't even characterize it, but I will say this. And what I said after he left, Thomas Jefferson, when he was president of the United States, tasked his Secretary of the Treasury, Gallatin, to put forth an infrastructure proposal for the initiative for the country. It would follow the Lewis and Clark expedition, the Louisiana Purchase. It would be about the Erie Canal, the Cumberland Road, things
like
that.
All right, so she goes on and on like this. I want to cut to the end here. Okay, here's the end of her statement.
The deficit we have, we're talking about a couple billion dollars. For some reason, maybe it was lack of confidence on his part that he really couldn't match the greatness of the challenge that we have, wasn't really respectful of the Congress and the White House working together.
Oh, my God, Nancy. You see why I'm so down on Nancy Pelosi?
Took a pass.
I'm sorry.
And it just makes me wonder why he did that. In any event, I pray for the President of the United States.
In any event, she prays for him.
And I pray for the United States of America.
Well, you know what? As much as I'm not big on hopes, thoughts, and prayers, we, I guess, need them now. She's praying for him. And in his Twitter rants this afternoon, Trump thanked her for her prayers. Oh, my God. Now, I tried yesterday. I saw an article in the Washington Post that had a whip list of Democrats who were supporting impeachment. Unfortunately, my congressman wasn't on there. So I tweeted to him. I tweeted to him and said, Congressman Representative Ted Deutch, why are you not on this list? And later, I don't know if he did it or one of his staffers, but they sent me a direct message on Twitter with a link to a Washington Post article in which he's quoted basically not saying he's for impeachment, but saying I don't know what he said. He's mincing his words. Here's my Congressman Ted Deutch on CNN with Erin Burnett the other day when she asked the same question.
I know you've seen your fellow Democrat on your committee, David Cicilline, is saying tonight the House should open an impeachment inquiry. He's now taking that step, and he's been, you know, very careful about his wording. He's now saying if McGahn does not show up, then if McGahn doesn't testify, then you all should move forward with impeachment proceedings and an inquiry. Do you agree?
Well, I agree that we,
and here goes the long answer.
Spend just a minute, Erin, reflecting on.
No, we don't need to reflect anymore. We know what impeachment is.
The last opportunity we have constitutionally to protect the separation of powers in our country. And when the president first is mentioned more than a dozen times for potentially obstructing justice, and we need to investigate, then goes out of his way to obstruct Congress and even goes to court to try to obstruct us from doing our job, then anything that will give us more tools to get to the truth ought to be considered. And certainly our only choice is we can throw up our hands and say the president is right. No one has an interest in getting to the truth and let him continue to block it. Or we can look at every means we have in order to get to the truth to ensure that no one is above the law.
So, look, I know you're putting that as one thing out there, but, you know, it is important here as these defy, right? They don't show up. They defy subpoenas. You know, your chairman, Jerry Nadler, has said it's a constitutional crisis. So
I agree.
What does it take for you? You do
what
agree.
Does okay, it take
so for you? At this point
what does it take?
Let's do it. Let's go ahead with these impeachment proceedings.
What's the answer?
Because at least that would enable you to get the information that they are denying you now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would provide, as I said, it would provide tools for us, more tools for us to move forward, and I think receive have an easier time getting this information that we need. Look, I've been pretty clear about this, Aaron. I think we ought to, instead of doing this piecemeal, we ought to be right up front with all of the people that we expect to hear from, and let's just put it to the administration once and for all.
Okay.
Instead of going through this piecemeal time and time again, where we wait until the last minute.
So you do it all, you see what they say, and then if the answer is no, then you impeach, but you're not there yet.
And when they say the answer is no, as we predict they will, it will be clear to the American public that they have only one interest, and that's in trying to prevent the truth from coming out.
So the question is, how many times do they have to ask and be turned down? You know, it's like the ugly guy, the incel, you know, the, what are they called? They're involuntarily celibate. They keep asking and asking and asking, and nobody will go out with them. Democrats, get the fucking message. They're not going to play ball with you. And the longer they wait to do something, the more feckless the Democratic Party appears. I've got more stuff to get into. Maybe we'll do it today. Actually, where my friend, our friend of the show, you know him, you love him. Well, he's the guest formerly known as Gaius Publius. Let's get him on the line, and then I'll explain to you what prompted me to call him. So let's do this. Oh no, where's Gaius Publius's intro? Tell me, I lost it. Oh my goodness. Oh no, there it is. There we go. Okay. And then I'll explain to you what he wrote that made me invite him back on the show today.
All rise for Gaius Publius.
That's not his real name.
You call Gaius Publius into question?
Sure.
Very well. For the audience at home.
What is the real name of Gaius Publius?
Lonnie Anderson?
No, I'm sorry, you're wrong.
What is it? I gotta know, I can't take it
anymore! All right, I'll tell you, calm down. His real name is Thomas Neuberger.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's it?
That's it, Thomas Neuberger. Oh. And now, here's Thomas Neuberger on the Nicole Sanders Show.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
there you are. Hi. Sorry, I've been a bit apoplectic today, just watching the events unfold in Washington, D.C., and seeing this moronic orange monster emerge from the Oval Office and go into the Rose Garden to say, I'm not doing anything with them until they stop investigating me. It is just so surreal at this point. I can't believe the events of the last 2.5 years are actually happening. I feel like I'm in the Bob Newhart show, and I'm going to wake up in bed with Suzanne Pleshette.
Well, you sidetracked me there.
Yeah, you know what? You sound like way overmodulated. Is your volume up really loud? And then I turn it down there, and I can turn it up here. We just got a weird.
I'm listening.
Okay, there you go.
I'm on a headset.
Okay, that sounds good. Good right there. Perfect. Okay. So anyway, watching what happened this morning, you know, Nancy Pelosi had the meeting with the House Democratic Caucus early in the morning, allegedly, ostensibly to discuss where they are in the impeachment battle. Nancy Pelosi says to the press, Donald Trump is engaged in a cover-up. Donald Trump, who reportedly woke up in a shitty mood anyway and was ranting and raving and at everyone, then went ballistic and wanted to hold this event in the Rose Garden again, which I think was pre-planned because they had those posters made up, just saying. But wow, this was a presidential temper tantrum on the level of a 4-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, this is your classic standoff. And I did listen to the first part of your show.
I'm sorry.
And well, I'm not. I think you're right to focus not on Trump, because, you know, he's a cobra, and he'll do what cobras do, but on the mongoose who won't strike.
Mm. Yes.
Which is the Democratic Party. That's the nub of the problem.
Yep.
the Democratic Party will not keep up their end of the constitutional bargain. And they're
like, what are they afraid of
already?
We could
talk about the reasons why they aren't doing that. We could also talk about the consequences.
Yes. Well, let's start with Gerald Nadler has said, you know, he was asked, why, you know, haven't you brought up the Barr censure vote or the contempt vote to the entire House? He said, well, we'll do that when we come back for Memorial Day. Why? There's an urgency here. The House is on fucking fire. You can't just let it smolder. But they are going to.
And Nancy Pelosi is quoted as saying, I have a YouTube of her saying it in front of me, Putin appears to be President Trump's puppeteer.
Uh-huh.
Why is that not a prima facie case for urgency?
I don't know. I don't understand why their heads aren't on fire. I don't understand why they're just, I don't know if this is the correct word, but it sounds right, lollygagging. La 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 la. Just another day on Capitol Hill. Oh, we'll get to it. Yeah, he'll dig himself. No! Do something! That Tom Steyer ad calling for impeachment, I think, is brilliant because it talks about the Democrats are doing nothing. And whether they are or not, perception is reality. And this is the way it appears to those of us who are out here, including me, and I'm a pretty educated person on the subject. It seems like they're doing nothing. They're dragging their feet while he's able to paint the entire Democratic caucus as, you know, witches on a hunt.
So I can't control Nancy Pelosi, and neither can most other people without money.
Right.
And I can't control Donald Trump, but I can control, and people like me can control, their own reaction to the game that Pelosi is playing and the game that Trump is playing.
Okay.
And I think we can talk about why won't they, but Why won't they? It has a couple of obvious explanations. The first one is, this is Occam's razor. Yeah. They don't want to.
They don't want to.
They don't want to impeach Trump. You're not going to convince them because they have power. In order to take somebody who's resistant to doing something, severely resistant to doing something, you have to have leverage over them. So, because they're not going to agree with you. They're not going to cooperate. So what kind of leverage do we have over Nancy Pelosi? I think that none now. I mean, she's past her She's past her
prime.
Well, that's true too, by a long shot.
Yeah, I know.
And that has to do with her mental acuity.
Yes, exactly.
But she's also past her vetting point.
Uh-huh.
Her vetting point was the day that people voted for Speaker of the House, and no progressive ran as an alternative,
yep,
even in a losing race, to lay down a marker and to do for the public what Keith Ellison did for the public when he ran for DNC chair,
right?
Which is to give the public somebody to make a fuss about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not Ellison that was the reason for the fuss. It was the public wanting Ellison.
Or not wanting Tom Perez. Not wanting the same old, same old. Because I got to tell you, one of the things, and shit, I think I deleted this comment, which is unfortunate. It just frustrated me. It was Jim Clyburn speaking to one of the cable news channels after it was last night, I believe, when they were talking about, you know, this divide in the caucus and so many are for impeachment. And Jim Clyburn said, we just need to keep doing the same thing we're doing now. Like, excuse me? I threw something at the television.
And Clyburn has power.
He does. He's the number three in the House of Representatives. And this is the problem. It's Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Jim Clyburn. I'm sorry. I'm not an ageist. If I was, I couldn't support Bernie Sanders. And I do. And Elizabeth Warren. These people are beyond their prime. We learned that Steny Hoyer, out of almost, I don't know, $200,000 that he's raised so far for this this election cycle, all but 175 of those dollars didn't come from small donors. This is the Democratic Party establishment, and I think we've established that we're done with them. Unfortunately, they're the ones still calling the shots, and this party is broken. And it's actually, this brings us, Tom, to the thing I wanted to talk to you about. I usually find a piece that you've written at downwithtyranny.com, and I say, hey, please come on the show. Let's talk about this. It's a great piece. This time, it's something that you wrote to an email list that we're on, where we have, you know, offline, well, they're still online, but private, more private conversations in a group setting. And we were talking about the future, basically, of where the Democratic Party is going and how we get through this election and the conundrum that faces us, which is really the divide between the establishment Democratic Party is represented by that group of leadership and the progressives, the young people, the activists, those of us who, as you say, are woke, have a woke voter's perspective. You say from a woke voter's perspective, those who aren't Democratic Party loyalists, those who've suffered under Obama, suffered under Trump, who expected to suffer under Clinton and expect to suffer under Biden, what's left for them to do at ballot time? And you know, this the Sanders divide with the rest of the party is not about the 2016 election. It's about the Democratic Party and the way they're treating a really large portion of its constituency. And the problem is we don't know exactly how large that is. I happen to think it's larger than the establishment constituency. And I think this party, as they're doing with this impeachment question, in my mind anyway, is going to fuck it up.
What is the it?
It? The 2020 election. You know, what you wrote, let me see if I can, let me share this a couple of paragraphs that you wrote. You wrote, I'm watching this energy crystallize as we speak. People in our world have no idea how angry many Sanders supporters are at the currently configured Democratic Party. Remember, these are people who supported Hope and Change in 2008 and didn't get it, who would have swelled the ranks of Dem loyalists if Sanders were the 2016 nominee, and watched him sabotaged. For the next election, this means that if the Democratic candidate is Sanders or Warren, the election is eminently winnable. And for the suffering and the woke, the last shred of hope is still alive. The rich will be truly convicted, confronted and evicted from power, or at least the battles against them publicly joined. And the worst of the climate crisis might be averted because the fossil fuel barons will be confronted head on instead of coddled and worked with. But here's the kicker. Sorry, I'm reading so much, but these are your brilliant words. You wrote, but if the Democratic candidate is a no change or faux change type, a Biden or a neoliberal in Sanders clothing, Trump is even odds to be the next president, thanks to a lack of Republican voter defection, which Sanders otherwise would capture, and a revenge vote for Trump from many Sanders supporters who see no hope under either party and are well and truly pissed at the D's. So I have a problem with that last group of Sanders supporters who would vote for Trump, but unfortunately, I know they're out there. I think they're a tiny minority, but they are a group big enough to make a difference.
If you subtract out the people who have institutional loyalties to the Democratic Party, mm-hmm. among the independent voters, yes. institutional and right. historical and emotional okay. loyalties to the Democratic Party, and you consider that what is the number, 45% of everybody who could vote doesn't vote in a presidential election. Is that the right number? I think it's close to that.
Yep.
You've got a lot of people who Sanders would bring out if he were the candidate.
I agree.
And if he's not the candidate, they're going to do one of two things. They're going to either – now we're talking independents.
Yep. Okay.
They're going to either not vote, which is the largest group of them, I suspect,
yep.
because I don't think a lot of people could pull the trigger for Trump or pull the lever
right,
for Trump.
Right, exactly.
But I hang out in Sanders supporting social media circles like Reddit.
Okay.
A lot of groups are Sanders supporting.
Right.
And I try to touch base with all of them. The anger at the Democratic Party and the desire to get revenge among those people is greater than anybody realizes, because we haven't – that tide hasn't broken the surface yet to where it's visible to anybody in the press or anybody who people like us who read generally mainstream sources like NPR and that kind of place, there's going to be a fair number of people who will vote for Trump for spite, because what do they have to lose? Let me put myself in their head now.
Okay, please.
What have I got to lose?
Yeah. Okay.
My ship is going down. I've got student debt over $100,000, and I'm working as a waiter.
Yep.
And I've been working as a waiter since I was 22, and I'm 35.
Ouch.
Who cares about me? Not either one of them. And the one who looked like they might have cared, the one with the knife in my back, is the one I'm going to punish. Not the one who put the knife in my chest, and I watched him from 20 feet away as he approached.
Okay, Jon Snow. yes, but you're right, and that's what it is.
That's the thinking,
yes.
And we can't change that.
Mm-hmm.
These people have had it. These are the U.S. version of Brexit voters.
Yeah,
it's going to screw things up, but screw it, it's already screwed up.
Right.
So let's throw the dice a little bit.
But
and
that's
see
what
if we
they
can shake
said.
Some
but
of this
but
stuff
that's
up.
That's what they said. Some of the people, like I don't mean to vilify her, but Susan Sarandon and others were saying maybe we need to hit rock bottom. Hillary Clinton will be bad. And I believe that if Hillary Clinton was elected, we'd be fighting her on every front right now, but it would be a different world. At least it would be a world that doesn't feel like we're living in an alternate universe. It would just be a world in which we still have idiots running the damn country, and we need to take it back from them and make it better. At least it wouldn't be as insane as it is now. But you also wrote in this email thread, you wrote, it's entirely possible. Here, let me back it up a little bit. You said, what should be our urgency in making sure that the next Democratic candidate, both A, represents a real solution, not just a delaying action, and B, looks like a real solution to pissed off indie voters? Can we afford to be okay about Biden or Booker or Kamala or O'Rourke or Buttigieg as the next Democratic candidate? I'll say now that the online Sanders people see right through all of them. They're cellophane. It's entirely possible that a strategy of NED is better than Trump will produce a loss. I so strongly agree with you here, Thomas. I fear, yes, all of those, but Joe Biden is the poster child of Hillary Clinton 2.0. It's going to be history repeating itself all over again. And next time, I don't think we're going to emerge from it.
You're right. And, you know, I wrote the most recent piece I published at Down with Tyranny was called Documenting the Train Wreck, and it was about climate.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's basically a statement of helplessness. And I'm not suffering. You're not suffering. You've passed all of your scares. A lot of the viewers or the listeners are not suffering, but some of them are.
Oh, I'm still suffering. I may not have lung cancer anymore, but make no mistake, I'm still suffering under the Bush economy crash. I'm still living in a house that's in foreclosure. I still can't get a regular job in the industry I've been in for over 40 years because the industry has changed so much and I've been aged out. I am not in good shape by any way, shape, or form. I am hurting along with the worst of them. So I may put on a brave face every day, but life is sure far from easy. So, you know,
and
a lot of us...
Can we afford...
No.
So the question is a two-part question, really. I asked only the first part. As you read... What should our urgency be in making sure that the next D candidate is a real solution and looks like a real solution to pissed off voters?
Top urgency, hair on fire urgency, code red emergency.
So what should we do? And my suggestion, which is not a bold suggestion, but it's one that I can't find anybody in any of my online communities who has thought this.
Yeah.
We have one, quote, theory of change right now. Get a Democrat in and Trump out.
Yeah.
That's our entire theory of change.
But not any Democrat. No, all Democrats are not created equal.
A neoliberal. Well, we may disagree about that. I think a neoliberal Democrat is death, is just death.
Right.
The next Obama. The sweet talker,
yep.
if it's O'Rourke, it's death.
Yep, I
and
agree.
Death for the country. Down the road, death for the country. And as Bill McKibben said in a recent piece, we've run out of elections to waste.
Mm-hmm.
So do we waste an election on Obama? 2008 was a wasted election.
Yeah.
We were promised hope and change and we didn't get it. Even if Clinton was in office, it's a wasted election.
Yeah.
I mean, Clinton might have taken us to war with Iran right now.
She's
more hawkish than Trump, who is actually rather, he's run by the hawks in his cabinet, but he doesn't have hawkish instincts.
Well, we don't know. We honestly don't know what Trump thinks about anything. He's never took a stance, a principled stand on anything. And every stance he's held, he's changed. So who the fuck knows what he means? He doesn't mean anything. He stands for nothing.
We've got a bathtub that's 90% full, and we've got a candidate who's going to take 30% of the water out of it, and another candidate who's going to take 10% of the water out of it. And the water keeps running into the bathtub.
Oh, God. And meanwhile,
That's what we're caught. So the problem is ours. The problem isn't theirs. The problem is ours. What do we do?
Yeah,
I think we need a different theory of change. I was advocating in January when the vote for Pelosi came up, and I was advocating on online lists, not in public, that somebody needed to pull a Keith Ellison, some bold progressive like Ted Lieu, who's not all that bold, I don't think, or perhaps Lou Rokana, who really is that bold.
I believe Ted Lieu is. I believe Rokana is. I believe Jamie Raskin is. I believe Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Katie Porter. I think there's a whole group of good progressives. We need to get behind them in the biggest way possible and support the life out of them.
But they need to get behind us in a way that's meaningful.
Yeah.
This isn't about – think of the Titanic. This isn't about discussions going on in the captain's quarters with people poring over maps. This is about whose hand is on the wheel as the iceberg approaches. Those discussions don't matter if the captain is still in charge and he's full speed ahead. It's really that simple. The captain has to be removed, and I'm not talking violently.
So, but who is the captain now? Nancy Pelosi?
We're SOL.
Who's the captain now? Nancy Pelosi?
Nancy Pelosi today is the biggest roadblock, as you've ranted. And Chuck Schumer's no better.
Nope.
Chuck Schumer is absolutely no better.
But the top three people.
They're fast tracking judges onto the Supreme Court.
Oh, my God. I know. And that they've cut down the amount of pre-vote debate time from over 30 hours to 3 hours. You may as well just put in a revolving door and let them all walk through. Chuck Schumer is worthless. By the way, he's the person who also handpicked Kyrsten Sinema to be the next senator from Arizona. By the way, still haven't heard why Kyrsten Sinema was meeting with Bill Barr. Her office wouldn't give a reason, wouldn't tell anybody. So
Kyrsten Sinema has quickly, and Howie Klein will tell you this, quickly risen to the ranks of
worst senator
most,
in the U.S.
Most
Senate.
Corrupt
yep.
senator
yep.
or near the top of that group.
Yeah, and we knew
this is Chuck Schumer, friend of Wall Street, looking at Kyrsten Sinema, knowing she's going to be a simpatico soul.
Yep. I hear you.
What do we do? We can rant and rave, and that's fine. We can make public protests, and that's fine. But there were multi-million people marches prior to the Iraq War, and Bush still launched that war.
Yeah, he did.
So in addition, we need something else to do. And I'm not sitting in the House. If I were, I'd put my name up and say, vote for me and let's just see how cowardly you people are versus who's the brave ones among you. And I would build as much public support as possible for the anti-Pelosi progressive candidacy, and I would lose. But the public would be awakened to the problem and the source of the problem. Right now, Pelosi is cemented into place for another 2 years.
Yep.
Or a year and a half.
And if Donald Trump wins re-election, it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter anymore. I think if Donald Trump wins re-election with the shit that he's pulled, I think this experiment in a Democratic Republic is over. I think we are on the edge of an autocracy. You have Donald Trump, who is a wannabe dictator. He consorts with the worst of the worst in the world, from Putin to Erdogan to Duterte, and on and on. Those are the people he looks up to, and he alienates our allies. He wants no part of the world, this country, as this democracy has been developed for 250 years. He wants his own thing, and he even joked, and I'm doing air quotes, joked at his rally the other night that he could serve for five terms.
Well, we're yes, I agree. And the Constitution is changing. It always changes in small ways. The Constitution meaning, what do the words mean and how is it practiced? So, for example, in 1933, the meaning of the Commerce Clause, which had a stable meaning prior to Roosevelt's election, was reinterpreted to mean something that gave us the modern administrative state. So that's a change in our Constitution. We are in the process of changing our Constitution. And Trump is just the latest in a long line that could go back to Nixon, to his corrupt deal with Gerry Ford to be pardoned for his crimes in exchange for Ford being handed the presidency.
Yeah.
You could argue, and some do, that the change in our Constitution goes back to the day when the national security state asserted itself against a president. And I'm talking JFK here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Bay of Pigs and then the subsequent assassination. There's no evidence for those assertions, but if you're looking for where was the seed, those seats, either of those seats, go way, way back. Trump is next in line. He's reestablishing precedent. Even if Trump isn't elected, what if Clinton were the next president after Trump? Don't you think that she would reestablish precedent? Would take advantage that the precedent was established?
I think once a president gains power, the subsequent presidents don't give it back. All this power grab that Trump has done, the next president will keep that power. We already hear the Democrats talking about doing all these things via executive order. Well, when Obama did things via executive order because the Congress was obstructing him at every turn, they screamed and yelled. Trump does it, and we're like, ho-hum. And now the Democratic candidates are going, well, I'll just change it by executive order. That's how they do this. They whittle away at us, whittle away at us, whittle away at us. And it's not going to get better unless we get a game changer in office.
Yeah, absolutely. And how many game changers are there? I see two in the
field. I see two as well. And I have their action figures right here. And I've got bumper stickers on my car for Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I will be happy with either one of them and frankly worried about any of the others.
So what we can do is to make sure that none of the non-Sanders, non-Warren Democrats get in, because we are screwed six ways to Sunday or 12 ways to Sunday if either, no matter who wins.
I agree.
We're screwed six ways from Sunday
I'm
if
afraid.
Biden wins,
yeah,
maybe
oh
eight.
Well,
I think
we're
screwed
six
totally ways from Sunday
screwed.
If Buttigieg gets in.
Yeah, I do too.
He's a consultant for a big rapist consulting firm, McKinsey.
Yes, McKinsey. And people need to read up. You need to read everything you can get your hands on about these people. There was a huge piece in Current Affairs magazine, currentaffairs.org, on Mayor Pete. Learn about these people before you jump on their bandwagon. And it's still early. Look, the first debates are a little more than a month away. I think once the debates start and people will have a chance to hear from these candidates, I have a feeling that Buttigieg and Beto and a lot of them are just going to fall off the map. I also hope that when Joe Biden has to stop talking in platitudes and start actually talking in policy and has to answer about Anita Hill and about his writing the crime bill and about the bankruptcy bill and all the other things that he's horrible programs he's got his tentacles on, then the American people will start to see, oh, shit, he's not Obama. Not that that would be a good thing either, but he's worse.
Well, the never Trump, always D press is going to make sure that O'Biden isn't put on the spot.
Yeah, well,
it's going to have to happen during the debates.
It's going to have to.
Somebody in a rope line is going to cause him to spit in their face. The way sometimes happened with Clinton.
Either way, I think it's time we all start running around with our hair on fire. I'm frankly surprised that the American people haven't taken to the street for a general strike yet, because I think that's our next move, but I think it's like herding cats. I don't think we're ever going to get it done. I'm afraid it's just a slow motion train wreck into the ocean of no future. There's my flowery description of I'm looking down the barrel
we a train wreck into the ocean. I love that. It's over the cliff, WWE style.
Thomas Neuberger is the real name of Gaius Publius, and you can still catch him at downwithtyranny.com and on Twitter at Gaius_Publius, and of course here when I beg him to come on the show. Thank you so much, Tom.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Sure. I don't think we solved anything, but at least I got my rant on. All right. Tomorrow is Thursday. Howie Klein will be back. I'm sure he's got a few things to say. We'll talk to you then. You know what? Since Randy Rhodes is on vacation, and I know a lot of you guys go over there for the start of her show, and she usually plays What's News. She's on vacation this week, and so they're playing really old What's News episodes. So I thought I would play for you today's What's News, because I didn't play it during the show. So take it away, Nicole.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
In recent weeks, a group of states, including Missouri, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Kentucky, and Ohio, all voted to make abortions nearly illegal after 8 weeks. This week, women are fighting back. On Tuesday, thousands of people across the country marched as part of the more than 500 Stop the Bans protests all across the nation. The Washington Post obtained a confidential IRS memo that says the president's tax returns must be given to Congress unless the president takes the rare step of asserting executive privilege. It's a stance that directly contradicts the Trump administration's justification for denying Congress's requests for them. The 10-page unsigned draft memo was prepared by a lawyer in the Office of Chief Counsel in the fall after Democrats made it clear they'd probably seek copies of Trump's tax returns under a 1924 law that states the Treasury Secretary, quote, shall furnish tax returns to Congress. Trump has said he'll fight this all the way to the Supreme Court. Members of Congress were finally briefed Tuesday on what's happening with Iran by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford, before taking questions. Here's Stranahan.
We have deterred attacks based on our reposturing of assets, deterred attacks against American forces. Our biggest focus at this point is to prevent Iranian miscalculation. We do not want the situation to escalate. This is about deterrence, not about war. We're not about going to war. This is about continuing to protect our interests in the Middle East and conducting the missions that we are there to perform.
Something just feels fishy here. This is how Bernie Sanders responded to the briefing.
I worry very much that intentionally or unintentionally, we can create a situation in which a war will take place. And let me tell you, I think when you do that, you're talking about a war that will go on and on and on. And I hope that the Congress does everything it can to remind this president about the Constitution of the United States. Sometimes we forget it, but some of us learned in school that it is the Congress that determines whether or not this country goes to war, and not the president of the United States.
The House Democratic Caucus is meeting Wednesday morning for a briefing by leaders on oversight and investigations. Yes, an update on where we go now. There is a growing group of House Democrats calling for opening an impeachment inquiry. Stay tuned. Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson was on Capitol Hill Tuesday for a hearing in the House Financial Services Committee, where he had a tough time answering what should have been easy questions regarding his job. California's Katie Porter took Carson to school.
As you look it up, I'd also like you to get back to me, if you don't mind, to explain the disparity in REO rates. Do you know what an REO is?
An OREO?
R. No, not an Oreo. An R-E-O. R-E-O.
Real estate.
What's the O stand for?
E-organization.
Owned. Real estate owned. That's what happens when a property goes to foreclosure. We call it an REO. Mm-hmm. And FHA loans have much higher REOs. That is, they go to foreclosure rather than to loss mitigation or to non-foreclosure alternatives like short sales than comparable loans at the GSEs. So I'd like to know why we're having more foreclosures that end in people losing their homes with stains to their credit and disruption to their communities and their neighborhoods at FHA than we are at the GSEs.
Wow. That's all I can say to that. Wow. But apparently Carson thought the whole thing was a joke, as evidenced by how he spoke to Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley.
Do you believe the substandard public housing conditions pose a risk to tenants' physical, mental, and emotional health?
You already know the answer to that.
Yes or no?
You know the answer.
Yes or no? I know the answer. Do you know the answer? Yes or no?
Reclaiming my time.
You don't get to do that.
Oh.
The time belongs to the gentlelady.
There's more extreme weather on the way, and unfortunately, I guess get used to it. About 28 million people are under the threat of severe weather Wednesday as a strong spring storm continues to wreak havoc from the Plain States to the Midwest to the South. There have been at least 130 reports of tornadoes over the last 5 days. This seems to be our new normal. Until things get even worse, a new study published by the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences concludes that global sea levels are rising much faster than previously estimated, potentially jeopardizing several major cities, including New York and Shanghai. The study says the oceans could rise by more than 6 feet if emissions continue unchecked by the end of the century. If that happens, it would swamp cities and displace as many as 187 million people. The unexpectedly rapid rise in sea levels is due to the accelerating melting of ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. There's more information at NicoleSandler.com/donate.